Hello and welcome back to Business Insight Podcast on VSuccess. This is Quoc Khanh, your host, and it's good to launch another episode on Greenovate, which is a sub-series where we talk to corporate leaders, industry pioneers, activists about the topics of green economy and innovation. And thank you, Nordic Chamber of Commerce in Vietnam, for this collaboration. And my guest today is coming from the third largest logistic company in the world, with more than 90 offices around the world. And their business is so good. If you bought the stock in 1995, now you're owning one of the few stocks that outperform Apple in terms of value creation. So it's my honor to welcome Mr. Eric Herding, the Managing Director of DSV Air and Sea Vietnam. Hi, Eric. Thank you.
Hi. Thanks for the invitation.
How did you end up in Vietnam?
Well, I was working in Taiwan, and I was speaking to my boss, and I said, you know, Taiwan's been really great. I met my wife. I started my family there. But I'm looking for the next challenge. I'd been there for about three and a half years, and things are going well. And then he said, oh, okay, let me think of something. And then he said, oh, Vietnam. I think Vietnam will be an interesting challenge for you, right? So, yeah, I uprooted the family, and we moved here. And it's been a very interesting journey in the last 5 years here. Getting to know, first trying to find out what I didn't know, so learn what I don't know, and then slowly figuring all of those things out, and then just trying to do my best in a number of different challenging scenarios over the last 5 years.
So what have you found out about Vietnam that fancy you the most?
Oh, fancy me the most. Well, I think there's no problem that's insurmountable in Vietnam.
Yep, always maybe moving.
Sometimes it might feel like there's no chance that we're going to get over the hump or get over this issue, but somehow in the last minute, everything becomes possible once again. And once we start running with something, we can run very fast, and amazing miracles can happen here. So, yeah, I think it's if you can hold your nerve and keep your patience and keep your optimism, then anything good can happen as a result.
This is a place of opportunity. I didn't know that we went to the same race, Ironman in Phú Quốc, the other week. And could have said hi on the race. But how did you enjoy the race in Phú Quốc Island?
Yeah, I love the experience, right? It's my first time to do. I've done a few running carnivals or races or something like that. It was my first time. I did the bicycle leg of the relay team, so it was my first time to get the bike there and get everything set up and get into the transition area and see how everyone was preparing. And you know, you just get a really good energy from everyone because everyone is there feeling optimistic. And then we saw there was a wind forecast that was a little bit stronger.
That was a tough route, man. A lot of wind.
So, it was some camaraderie. Even you're not supposed to be drafting, you can also give some other competitors a bit of encouragement. And, if someone goes past you, then you get a little bit of energy to try to catch up again, something like that. So I really thought it was a really cool experience for me. And we had a lot of friends and neighbors that were there as well. So, you know, when you get to share some experience like that with others, you know, it gives a good feeling. So definitely want to try again.
Congratulations on finishing your first triathlon race in Vietnam. Okay. Hope to see you next time.
Yes, I hope to see you again. And congratulations to you as well.
Oh, thank you. That was rough, man.
You do much stronger than me. You do the whole thing on your own. So.
Well, yeah, let's do it together next time. So DSV in Vietnam, for the people who are not so familiar with DSV in Vietnam, tell me more about what you guys doing here.
Yeah, So when I speak to people that are not familiar with supply chain and freight forwarders, so we're a freight forwarding company, and freight forwarding company is a little bit like a travel agent, right? So when you have a trip that you want to plan, and you want to plan all the transportation arrangements, all the visa arrangements, all of the activities, something like that, you go to a travel agent and they take care of everything. They don't fly the airplanes or run the trains to get you from here or there, but they make all the coordinations and then make a convenient experience for you, keep you updated on the schedule or any changes or any things that might impact. And basically that's the service we do, but for companies that want to trade products internationally, so importing and exporting. And predominantly when we talk about that, we talk about sea freight, where we ship on containers that go on vessels and go through ports and end up in distribution centers and end up at stores or with consumers. Or we talk about air freight, where, you know, when you're boarding the plane, sometimes you see those big silver boxes getting loaded under the underbelly of the plane. We pack everything up there, consolidate all of our customers onto one of those units, put it under the plane, and then make sure it gets to the destination on time.
But that's very easy to understand. I saw a lot of videos about DSV, and I read about you guys on internet. And DSV is always promoting and emphasizing the terms called green logistics. So what do you mean by green logistics?
Yeah, so we are a Danish company, one of the largest and most successful companies in Denmark, a country with a great tradition of business and also innovation when it comes to renewable energy. You know, it's probably one of the highest countries in terms of concentration of renewable energy to power. So, you know, there's a certain DNA there with a Danish business and renewable energy. So there's certainly a big focus from the top of the organization down on the environment, on caring for the future generations and trying to make a positive impact with different solutions. So the banner of green logistics encompasses some of those ideas on what we have to offer to customers that can eventually reduce the CO2 emissions, right? So the first aspect of that is actually measuring what we're doing today. So we publish on the invoices the amount of CO2 emissions that is being calculated.
On the invoice.
Yeah, on the invoices. So each customer can understand the impact of their shipment, right? And then once you know the impact, then we can also understand what are the drivers to, you know, reduce that impact. How can we do things more efficiently or sustainably to reduce the impact? And then that's the second part of the formula. So something about optimization and efficiency of the way that we handle the shipments. So we've got experience on, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of customers globally on all kinds of different services and loops. So we can bring that experience to our customers and explain to them ways that they can make a reduction. Then there's the concept of sustainable fuels. So within the aviation industry and within the marine transport industry, there are some supplies of sustainable fuels available. So we can present that option to customers as well. The challenge is, of course, that they are more expensive than fossil fuels, and their supply isn't as much. So in some situations, it's a challenging sell to customers. But where there's a willingness on both sides, and maybe we can find a good fit. It doesn't need to necessarily be every single kilo that they ship, but maybe some portion of it on sustainable fuels, and we can work something out. A solution on that basis. And then there's also a CO2 offsetting offer that we have, and that basically is where we and the customer may pledge a certain amount of money to invest in environmental initiatives that NGOs are running around the world, something along those lines. So those are the four, I guess, pillars of the green logistics strategy.
Sure. So what is the situation in Vietnam when you're mentioning about sustainable fuels? Your client can choose what kind of fuel, right? So what is the situation now in Vietnam?
So it's not like Vietnam has a large stock of sustainable aviation fuel that we can just go to the petrol bowser at the airport and say, can we put some sustainable aviation fuel on this flight because our customer's shipping 20 cubic meters of garments on there or something like that. It's not available right now in Vietnam. So if our customer's interested in it, then we can offer sort of a credit. So although the cargo doesn't fly out on a flight that's run by sustainable fuel, we acquire the fuel on behalf of the customer, and then we issue a certificate to say that it was used on another flight between a different geography. And then then they can report a saving on their on their CO2 emission because they used a more sustainable fuel, something like that.
Yeah. So aviation industry and marine shipments, those guys are the areas that sometimes got criticized a lot in terms of environmental impact.
Sure.
So in Vietnam, how do you address those challenges in terms of trying to reduce the impact on the environment?
Yeah, we have an economy that has to run, right? So, you know, the shipping industry, for example, there's global rules that come in to reduce the amount of sulfur that's in the fuel, or improve the quality of fuel that goes into the vessel, so there's less impact. There's other environmental standards on there, but it's not something that we can just turn the switch on and turn it into an entirely green industry overnight. It definitely will take time, and the alternative is that we just don't have those services, and then the global trade ceases to function in a meaningful way. So we've got to look at the available services that are out there, work with the partners, shipping lines, airlines, and give the feedback from the market and what the market expects and demands, and then give them the opportunity to make those investments, and then back that up with our commitments that we support them on those services when they become available.
So, I mean, in Vietnam, what should we focus on to solve that problem? What kind of areas are we focus on in this journey of sustainability?
Yeah, I think the sustainable fuels and the other more advanced technologies are probably a little bit out of reach just at the moment for many businesses in Vietnam. So I would switch more on the efficiency side of things, right? And then there's a number of things that we can do at a micro level all the way through to a macro level to take advantage of that, right? So when we talk about customers and their business processes and rules, we can strive for a higher level of consolidation when we talk about moving goods in containers from the factories or from the consolidation centers out through the port. So, we have one example where we've been able to save something like 19% of the customers' containers that they were shipping out because we set a new threshold to manage a higher payload in the different containers. So those kind of solutions are probably best. Then we can work with our trucking companies and our port operators to try to optimize the number of trips that we're making. So we're not sending empty trucks into the port to pick up a full container and come out. That we've always got a program to, have a truck that's making a return leg with a movement, right? We can look at the barging terminals that are available and steer more of the cargo to the barging terminals and deliver to the port in Vung Tau, as opposed to trucking into Cat Lai and then you know, creating a level of congestion and pollution on the roads in and around Ho Chi Minh City if we drive everything into the port as opposed to using the barging technology. So there's a lot of opportunities out there for customers and for us, but we need to have a clear planning. We need to have a clear setup and arrangement for it in order for it to work, because there's a lot of different stakeholders, you know, that are, you know, factories that want to get the things mm-hmm. out of their factory as soon as possible, or customers at the other end that want their products yesterday or something like that. So we need a good planning and a good collaboration between all the partners. From the government perspective, maybe the opportunities are to speed up the way that the containers are entering and exiting the port. Mm. You know, for example, if every truck has to stop and run into the office and produce some paperwork and sign something, where, you know, you think about it, like on the toll road, when you have everyone stopping and paying the money into the toll booth, you have a traffic congestion that goes in behind it. We have a little bit the same situation in the port. Other ports around the world have a much more automated process, so there's a much faster flow of trucks moving in and out of the port, which then will reduce the amount of trucks on the road, reduce the amount of congestion, reduce the amount of idle, reduce the amount of emissions that are coming out there. So I think for Vietnam, the focus should be on the efficiency side of the equation.
And for now, the efficiency is not that high.
Yeah, you don't have to take my word for it. You can go down to the Cat Lai port access roads any Thursday, Friday, Saturday morning, and you can see a queue of trucks that are lined up to get into the port, and they're all running on either full or empty or whatever it happens to be. So, you know, that situation is one which we could drastically improve with the right adaption of new systems and policies, I think.
Then we have to wait from the policy, but I mean, from DSV, what can you do then?
Well, I think we just work with our customers, right? So we have customers, and we look at their data, we look at their flows, and then we look at our pool of trucking providers, and then we can find the right fit to make sure that, you know, we're mobilizing a truck from a depot that's closer to the factory. We're looking at the barge connection terminals and providing them with different services, linking that back to a consignee on the other end to say, well, this is going to cost you an extra 100, but it's going to save your shipper 150. So, you know, we bring those facts to the table, and then everybody can share maybe in the benefits with that type of solution. So it's really, you know, connecting the dots and bringing all the parties together and creating a more collaborative approach to the efficiency that can get us over the line with those kind of topics.
A lot of work to do to increase the efficiency.
Yes, it's a busy work, but that's what we're paid to do as well, right? And when you have efficiency that creates cost savings and time savings, it's an easy sell to customers. When you've got solutions that require additional cost, then the selling is much more difficult in our industry, for sure.
That is the efficiency part. You mentioned the technology, high technology. Could you kind of elaborate on that? I mean, any lesson we can learn from other developed market?
One example that we're developing in Denmark, again, I think that's really the hub of where a lot of this is coming from. We have something like DSV Energy, right? So, you know, DSV and then other players in the market are building basically power stations on their logistics center footprints. So you can imagine warehouses have a very big footprint, because they have a lot of pallets and products inside, and they have a large roof area. So you can put solar panels on the roof, then we can invest in some battery storage technology. And then not only can we run the operation in the logistics facility, but we can also potentially charge some electric trucks or vehicles that are coming in to pick up or drop off, right? And then that kind of thinking can then extend to other distribution centers and other ports. And then we can build up more of a network of, you know, renewable energy charging of electric trucks or electric axles or hybrid trucks, something along those lines.
Wow, right? EV trucks.
Yeah. If we try to power EV trucks in Vietnam now with coal-powered fossil fuel energy, then it doesn't have much of an impact. And I think we also need to have a very stable electricity supply in order to implement that kind of solution here. So, you know, maybe in Vietnam, the technology has to be in terms of, you know, mandating a higher emission performance on some of the vehicles, especially the new vehicles that are being registered, in order to, you know, reduce the impact of the trucking industry here.
Well, I don't think we're ready for EV trucks here. We only have EV taxis here, but EV trucks are going to take a long time.
The whole infrastructure needs to be built up. You know, it makes sense when we have renewable energy that's enough to power it. So once that comes, then yes, I think we can bring in more electric trucks. Now we've got to find other ways to improve the efficiency of the trucks with some new technologies, right? I think another interesting technology that, you know, ties into the efficiency piece that could be used, you know, on a micro level is where we have something like AI, where it can make some predictive analysis on what different models would do in terms of efficiency and emissions, and then it can figure out an optimal way to manage a setup or a program. And then on a macro level, maybe that could be applied on the, you know, especially when we talk about the various movements of containers in and out of the port, into the inland container depots, the barging depots, and then make a better transportation network to cut down the trip times, the driving times, the waiting times, the idle times, all of that kind of stuff. So I think there's a really interesting opportunity there, especially as Vietnam is one of the countries that has a fairly high adoption rate on those kind of technologies. So I'm pretty confident that the AI will help us to solve some of these problems in the future, and it's something that I know there are investments going into that field here in Vietnam. So I hope that it can find an application in the port transport topic as well.
Yeah, I know that you guys, DSV, you don't own many access. You work with third party. You work with club partners. For example, like trucks partners. So how do you make sure those partners comply with all the, you know, environmental or sustainability requirements from DSV?
Yeah, I think there's sort of an initial process when we're onboarding or, you know, renewing with a trucking company in Vietnam, where we make some, I will call it review of their policies, procedures. I mean, the environmental part is one thing, you know, safety is another big topic. You know, we've also done audits on that they're paying wages that are suitable, and that they have social insurance payments, and no illegal workers, and no, everyone has a contract. So we try to elevate the standard there and make sure that we're working with qualified and reputable companies. We also look at the fleet size and the age and the type of technologies that they have. It's not a mandatory requirement that every trucker that we use is latest in technology, but it's some information that we can then, you know, formulate to solutions that go back to our customers. And then when we have our review meetings, I think the key point is that we actually make some incremental actions that we agree, and then 3 months later we come back and see how are those topics going, right? So, and then we can also identify some partners that are more front runners in the process, and then we can actually, you know, lead the way with those ones, and then we can, once we've got sort of a proven track record of initiatives that work on that front, then we can, you know, with more confidence, introduce them to the wider network as well that we're working with.
Can you be able to find good partners here in Vietnam? What seems to be your biggest challenges here in terms of finding good partners?
at some point, you know, the cost is always the driver, right? And, you know, not that DSV is not in it to make a profit as well. So, you know, when we are offering services, we've got to make sure they're very competitive. You know, in logistics and supply chain, the cost and time are the two variables that people pay close attention to, right? So it can be challenging for people that have invested in new equipment to match the cost levels of those that are on the, you know, on the lower scale. But there may be other advantages to that newer equipment, right? So we try to work with the companies that have the best practices and that can get the competitive pricing back so that we can compete in the market, right? So there are, you know, there are then that turn where the companies that are more forward looking, the front runners, they also have better ideas on how to do things more efficiently potentially as well. So, you know, we can maybe find the right balance there between those two, you know, maybe conflicting priorities to bring some solutions to the customers.
But I guess green logistics solutions likely equal high cost. How is the reaction from your customers in terms of premium prices?
Generally, it's not a high adoption rate now for paying just to be green, right? If you have a more direct service and it's faster, and then it happens to also be less emissions, and that's also a value for the customer, that may be a little bit of a different conversation there. But just paying to be green is not really high adoption. I'll put it politely like that. As you know, more regulations come in different regions, for example, in the European Union, if there starts to be more obligations to pay higher taxes based on emissions that are you know, released into the atmosphere, then of course we might see more and more adoption. You know, there are companies that have to reduce their emissions because they've promised that to their shareholders. So as we get closer to 2025, when some preliminary targets start filtering through, 2030, when some really you know, concrete targets start coming through, then we're going to see that, you know, it may be a little bit of a, not a panic, but a press to find those green solutions so that they can report in their annual report that they've been able to reduce the emissions to maintain the good position in the share market with their shareholders.
There's another part that you mentioned on your article the other day on Vietnam Investment Review. You talk about efficiency, technology, and then sustainable fuel. How do we improve on this segment, sustainable fuel in Vietnam?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, right? Because the sustainable fuel progress from my research in the last 5 years is quite outstanding. You know, there's a lot of fair feedback going back to the industry to say, yes, we're creating sort of a sustainable fuel here now, but look at the impact on the environment to create that sustainable fuel. And are we actually better off now for having, used food crops to create sustainable fuel, and then people don't, you know, the price of food goes up, for example,
yeah,
you know?
It's not upsetting, yeah.
You know, you have ethanol production in Brazil is another example where, yes, on some face value, it creates a lower CO2 emission when you talk about the emissions coming out of the tailpipe of the vehicle. But in order to regenerate the fields where the sugarcane is grown that produce the ethanol, they've got to all burn it every year so that they can rejuvenate the field. So then you're creating another problem with that sort of solution, right? So I think Vietnam is in an interesting opportunity now to look forward in sustainable fuels, biofuels, technologies with waste conversion into fuel, and really build an industry in Vietnam. It's a very diverse country. I hope that it doesn't come at the expense of the natural resources that we develop
this
kind of industry.
Yeah.
But you know, it will catch up on fossil fuels, and it will be not only good for the environment, but it could be a great economic pillar of the economy in the future as well. So I think, there's a great opportunity for people smarter than me to look into the various technologies that are available there and really, make investments to start up an industry here on this topic. Because as I mentioned, those targets that start coming in and becoming real in 2030 and those taxes that may come in other parts of the world, they are going to demand alternative fuels to fossil fuels and more renewable sources. So it's an opportunity now for Vietnam to build up an industry in this.
You know, can't solve a problem by creating another problem.
Yeah, we don't want the cure to be worse than the disease, right? So that's something we should always consider.
In your industry, logistic industry, why is it so hard to be a green logistic company? I mean, I guess a lot of logistic companies want to do it green as well, but why is it so hard to do green logistic?
Yeah, we are, we're following the market and what the customers are looking for, right? So that's what we're getting the feedback on. So you can't just force feed the green agenda down the throat of the supply chain managers and logistics managers, right? It takes time. It takes collaboration to foster a strategy that can then, create value for their role and their business and also reduce emissions. So there's no real silver bullet to becoming just a green logistics company. There's not enough sustainable fuel now. There's not enough electric trucks or electric vehicles now to, turn it off completely and go completely green. So we have to take a more collaborative, medium-term, long-term partnership approach with customers and partners to get there. That's what I see.
How do we stay away from greenwash? How do we do it actually? I mean, make it effectively, not just greenwash, and stay away from that.
Yeah, I think that's a big challenge, right? Because there's pressure. There's pressure coming from the market to show that we're doing something, right? There's pressure coming to set targets and to find solutions to all of those targets, right? So we've got to talk it up in a way so that we can bring it forward. But what we talk about now and what actually ends up happening in 3 and 4 years, it might be a totally different solution that comes out of it. So I think shying away from making big promising statements and doing things just because it's in fashion or it looks good, I think taking a more pragmatic and patient and collaborative approach is what I see is a better way. And also trying to change a little bit the culture of our businesses so that we also, in our business and our individual behavior and all of that kind of stuff, we also make, a little bit of a difference, right? And then get some runs on the board and then build off of those and build off of those and build off of those. The big sweeping solutions that cover everything, they're just not available for our industry yet. We've got to take a step-by-step approach to this. Anyone that says they have a solution to the whole problem with one bullet is probably then doing a greenwashing.
I see. You've been around in Vietnam for 20 years, DSV Vietnam. I'm curious about how you guys educate the market about sustainable logistics. Among your employees or your partners, how do you do, education, communications, so people can understand more about sustainable and green logistics?
Yeah, I think the first you know, the first part of it is actually getting, you know, getting ourselves educated and informed about it, right? So, you know, for me, it's, you know, I've been doing this business for 20 years in four different countries, and this topic of sustainability has been a, you know, a topic that's been floating in the ether now for about 5 years, but it hasn't really been a, you know, a real material action topic in my experience since about 2 years. So, you know, how can I expect the rest of the team to live and breathe and promote this kind of topic if I don't even understand it mm-hmm. properly myself? So the first step is to been try to, you know, expose myself to the various concepts, and then to try to bring, you know, this concept of front runners from our organization. You know, we have a sustainability ambassador now that's linked to a network of sustainability ambassadors inside DSV, sharing different ideas about how not only we do the logistics piece, but our, you know, our own activities inside our own walls and our, and you know, when we have company trips, right, we try to do them in a different way and have a focus on sustainability, reduce single-use plastics even, or talk about how to manage waste, you know, how do we deal with environmental risks like spills and that kind of thing in our logistics facilities. So, you know, we've got to be able to get those basics right first before we start preaching to the outside world on all of the other things that they should do, and then also lead a little bit by example. And then once we find those front runners and we can bring them into the change, mm-hmm. then, you know, share that education with them, and then we also bring that topic to customer meetings or supplier meetings, and then start with some, you know, achievable short-term goals that we can then come back on in the next 3 month review and see how we're progressing, and then introduce more and more of those concepts, get some measurements on the table, get some baseline data on the table. So, you know, we have a sort of a launching pad to do something more significant with in the future.
Talking about data, and I remember that you emphasized the importance of data collection and using data to inform decisions. And how does DSV implement a data strategy to, let's say, making better decisions on sustainability?
Yeah, so I think the big challenge and opportunity for our industry is the data platform, right? Because we have, you know, we have so much data that we're collecting on all kinds of different, supply chain aspects, right? We're involved from door to door, and even from source to consumer in a way. So we have, you know, we have a tremendous amount of data that we could capture in a structured way in order to really, you know, feed a problem-solving mechanism, right? So right now we're trying to, you know, we're trying to build on the, you know, the core data elements that we already have and are managing on an accurate basis, and expand upon that so that we have more variables and data points that we can make better analytics on, and then provide better solutions and value back to, you know, our customers and back to our own business. So I think, you know, with AI, and it's, to me, it's an AI revolution, right? Similar where we had the Industrial Revolution, and we maybe had social media revolution or the internet revolution, AI has the potential to be just as powerful. So those companies that have the right data platform that they can make, you know, the right connections to that revolution will definitely take leaps and bounds and be difficult to compete against into the future.
On the macro level, how can the government of Vietnam can collaborate with such a large companies like DSV, the third largest logistic company in the world, to foster, let's say, a more sustainable logistic industry for Vietnam? Any regulations changes that could impact sustainability level here for the logistic industry?
Yeah, I think there's probably, you know, 100 things that could be considered and looked into, right? We've got to understand their prerogative. We've got to understand their priorities. They've got to be open and listening to what the industry has to say. And I would say, you know, it's not a DSV running alone to build this up. You know, that's why we have our partnerships with the likes of NordCham and the likes of the EuroCham and the Transport and Logistics Sector Committee there, that we can actually drive an agenda forward to the right connections in the ministry, right? So if we want to talk about something like, you know, efficiency of entering and exiting the port, right? I think, you know, when you have different stakeholders from shipping lines, from ports, from freight forwarders, from trucking companies collaborating and presenting sort of a consolidated message and a consistent message to the authorities, they should take some notice of it and think about some improvements that we can make on something like that. So yeah, I hope to increase my profile with this kind of interview and the article, and then work maybe closer with my colleagues in the chambers, and let's see what we can do in the future on the topic.
At this moment, we are almost finished 2023. At this time of the year, I mean, for this moment, what seems to be the biggest challenge for DSV in Vietnam in terms of keeping with your plan to reduce CO2 emission in Vietnam? What are two or three key challenges that you have right now that you have to cope with?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, we have a lot of business challenges. It's a tough market, right? And, you know, it's easy to make an excuse to say, well, you know, the economic situation isn't so rosy, and there's a lot of competition, and, you know, there's a lot of pressure coming from the management on the financial performance and all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, there probably is never a good time to take the initiative. But I think we need to, you know, we need to make and advance strategies to, you know, work more, build more relationships, and get more actions out there on this topic, because it may come a time 2 years down the track where we're asked, what have we done about it? How have we managed to, you know, creep closer to our medium-term target of 20% reduction? And if I'm sitting there in the board meeting with the top management and say, well, we've had this and we couldn't do this because of this, and I have a lot of excuses, then maybe I don't have a promising future. So we've got to take a leadership challenge to actually, you know, make this a pillar of our company in the present and into the future.
I'm curious about DSV viewpoint on the, let's say, the most important question: commercial economic developments versus the cost of the environment. Just the balance right there. What is DSV perspective on that?
Yeah, I don't know if I can answer for DSV, right? I don't know if we have we haven't got that one in the company policy. You know, what's the perspective on economy or environment, right? And I could share my personal perspective on the topic, and you know, I don't think it's appropriate to stop all economic activity to regenerate the environment. You know, there are unintended consequences of doing something like that, right? We want to create a wealthy and prosperous nation in Vietnam, say, for example, because wealthy and prosperous nations have the ability to look further into the future and to find, you know, more sustainable solutions. If you're struggling for survival because we have a disastrous economic situation, then it's very difficult to make the necessary investments to drive an agenda. So, you know, that would be my sort of take on things. It's got to be a transition. You know, we have to find new industries, new jobs, new ways of education, new opportunities into the future that make not only things more environmentally sustainable, but also make the nation and the people of the nation more prosperous. So I think that's the best way to proceed there. If we try to, you know, tax and stop certain activities and things from happening in a sort of unnatural way, then, you know, we might do more damage than good to the economy.
Right. Yep. It all comes down to a signature question of the show. I want to ask you and hear from your perspective as well. What have been the most critical strategic decision that you have ever made that help your company in this journey of sustainability and green innovation?
Yeah, I touched on a little bit earlier, but I think the most critical decision was actually, you know, waking up to it myself and actually taking the time to listen to what the leaders of the company are saying, listen to what our shareholders are saying on the topic, raise the subject in meetings with customers. Even it could be a little bit uncomfortable because, you know, we don't necessarily have a clear cut solution to solve all of it at a lower cost and a faster speed, which maybe they're looking for, and also to do a little bit of, you know, research on my own, whether it was for the article or whether for the interview this afternoon. So I think, starting the journey for myself and then having the confidence that we can, you know, change the culture in the organization to not forget about all the other things that are important that have made us a successful business over the last 20 years in Vietnam and over the last 45 years globally, but to add it in as another key pillar of our strategy and our plan going forward. So that's going to be a really interesting journey for us all to go on in the future.
Great. Thank you for sharing. Good luck with everything in the coming future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Well, that's the sharing from Eric Herding, the managing director of DSV Air and Sea in Vietnam, the third largest logistic company in the world with more than 90 countries operations. Thank you so much for watching, and thank you Nordic Chamber of Commerce in Vietnam again for this collaboration. You can always listen to it again by subscribing to our YouTube channel, VietSuccess, or follow us on different podcast platforms such as Spotify, Google Podcasts, or Apple Podcasts. So thank you, and see you next time. Thank you, Willa. Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.